Welcome to Frame by Frame, Rethink Imaging, a podcast by Imalogix. Here, we explore the intricate world of medical imaging, aiming to dissect the field and inspire both professionals and curious minds alike. I'm your host, Chris St. John.
Today on Frame by Frame, Rethink Imaging, I am thrilled to welcome back Dr. Ehsan Soumey. Dr. Soumey is a distinguished professor and chief imaging physicist at Duke University, widely respected for his work in medical physics, advancing imaging methods, and improving patient safety. Today, we have brought Dr. Soumey back to discuss why imaging matters and how we can better understand the balance between the benefits of imaging and its real-world risks. So, Dr. Soumey, just to get us started, we're going to start very big, very broad, very high level here. Why imaging?
Chris, first of all, great to be with you again. You're such a great conversationalist, and it's a pleasure to spend some time with you. It's really great.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, why imaging? That's a good question. I think imaging is a gift. It is a gift that is given to us as a way to be able to sort out things through the body for the benefit of the patient, right? Primarily started as a diagnostic tool. Now, we use it now for therapeutic purposes and follow-up of the certain actions that we take therapeutically. But by and large, we do imaging because we want to figure out what's going on with the patient. So there is a significant benefit that we get from the imaging process itself. Of course, like any other medical procedure, there is some level of risk involved in the process as well. And often in the context of imaging, we often talk about benefit versus risk and so on. But by and large, we do imaging not because we are crazy. We do imaging because we want to bring something good to the care of the individual patient.
Right. And so, why radiation and why does radiation dose matter? And how do we think of these in concert with diagnosis?
Yeah, so the way I approach it is that the purpose of the imaging should always be central in the way we think about that procedure. In fact, the purpose of any medical procedure needs to be central to our approach. The purpose is to care for the individual. Otherwise, there is no point at all to actually do the imaging in the first place. So, provided that there is a purpose, you can assume there is a benefit, right? We should not be nilly-willy using any medical intervention. You just go and don't go out there and take some pills just for the fun of taking pills.
Right.
There is a purpose for the pill that you're taking, right? So now the purpose is clear and the purpose is justified, for example, I have a headache, now I need to take some medication, right? The benefit is obvious. Of course, there might be a risk. There might be a side effect of that medication that you're taking, and you want to minimize that. But the benefits always and should always outweigh any potential risk associated with that procedure. When it comes to imaging, Chris, I have found that people often talk about benefit versus risk. And when you put it that way, it implies that this versus that. You're implying that they are equal. They are not equal at all. The benefit significantly by orders of magnitude outweighs the risk. No, you want to minimize the risk. I'm not saying that. But the benefit always is central to that process, right?
Yeah.
In the same way in any procedure is like, in any decision is like that, right? You need to get to your work. Therefore, you can buy a car. Yeah, there is, when you buy a car, there is a cost involved. You have to draw money from the bank and pay for that car, but the benefit is obvious because without the car, you would not be able to get to your work, right?
Right.
Of course, you want to pay at least amount possible to get the car that you need. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is that I feel like this approach of asking the question of benefit versus risk misrepresents the reality of the value of imaging.
Right. And so what is the role of the patient in the care that they receive? When we're thinking about this, like slowly starting to move away from this risk versus benefit, but in terms of a patient making an informed decision about whether or not to get imaged, what is their role? How should they be thinking about it?
Well, thank you for asking that question. This has become central to my psyche in the last few years. you know, when you think about benefit and risk, whether benefit versus risk, benefit and risk, benefit in concert with risk, benefit significantly higher than risk or vice versa, doesn't matter. All of this, whose benefit we are talking about and whose risk we're talking about, not mine or yours. It is the benefit and risk of the patient. So we in medicine at large, this is a problem with medicine at large, that we tend to take more of a paternalistic approach toward the patient, that the patient doesn't know any better, and we are the guardians of their health, and therefore we need to make a decision for them. I think that's the wrong way of, wrong attitude. This is the patient's body, this is the patient's diagnosis, this is a risk to the patient if there is a risk, right? So at the end of the game, it's not my body, it's not autonomy of the patient. It needs to be central to everything that we do in medicine, right? And now, of course, the patient comes to us because we have certain expertise in that domain. So it's not that I'm not belittling the expertise that we have and we are vested, we are asked, we are responsible to exercise, right? I'm not saying the expert and non-experts are created equal. But when you think about it, the imaging process or many medical process is a shared decision-making between an expert who knows stuff more about that procedure and the patient who is the recipient or partaker of the benefit or the risk, right? Is a shared decision-making, is not my decision, is really a decision that we co-owned together. And this idea of co-ownership, shared decision-making, has also been missing in this landscape as well. Like, let me give you one example. Like, we say whether a benefit of examination is justified, the risk of it, let's say. Well, the scenario might be different from one patient to another patient. So a patient who has maybe received too many x-rays or exams in the past might be reluctant to do another one. While the other one patient might say, actually, I don't really care. I just want to make sure if there is any progression of my disease, I would like to be able to see it. Okay, so these are two scenarios. Imagine for a second that the two patients have exactly the same condition. The fact that the patient one has a slightly different preference from patient two, should that matter whether we do the imaging or not? I would say absolutely.
Yeah.
This is their decision ultimately, right? So we do need to incorporate the patient's voice and the patient's agency in the care that they receive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and because of that, you know, I would like to kind of start digging into things a little bit more and maybe try and give a little bit of an education to potential patients, right? Like myself included, which kind of leads me in a slightly different direction. But I've spent so much time on this podcast talking to physicists and radiologists, talking to folks about dose, optimization, radiation, all of this stuff, right? But we haven't really gotten back to the basic building blocks. I've been kind of flying ahead of things. Can you just start off by filling in our listeners and briefly explain the linear no threshold model and how it kind of became the standard for assessing radiation risk?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are getting into the geeky zone.
Yeah, I know. But I think the geeky zone is very important in this conversation.
Right. So first of all, I think we have, let me preface this to the comment that you made before you mentioned the LNT. We have been focusing so much on radiation dose because that was the only thing that we somewhat could assess. The assessment and measurements of radiation was a part of our approach. The benefit size was more difficult to measure. And also, it was too obvious to measure. If you follow what I said earlier, the fact that imaging provides benefit is a no-brainer. So why do you measure something that is a no-brainer, right? So, but the dose is somewhat ambiguous, and therefore we put a lot more energy into the dose estimation and dose assessment and dose mitigation and management and all that stuff. We can talk about more later on in terms of the measurements that we can have also on the benefit side of the ledger. But for now, going back to linear no threshold model. So the underlying science behind radiation harm, if you will, has to do with the fact that more radiation that you receive, proportionately, there is more likelihood of harm. Proportionately. So that means if you get twice as amount of radiation, that means you get twice as much harm. And then there is no minimum, is that if you just get nothing, of course, you have no harm from that radiation. But even if you get an iota more than nothing, that is also proportionately give you extra harm for that small amount. That's a no threshold piece. So linear no threshold. Linear means if I get twice the dose, I get twice the harm. That's the linear part. If I get three times the dose, I get three times the harm. And there is no harm. There is no threshold below which there is no harm. That's a no threshold version. So you can think about, you know, dose on the one axis and the harm on the other axis. And this is start from zero and goes up. So that's a linear no threshold model. So this model is a very conservative model. That means any dose is bad dose. First of all, what is the harm, by the way? There are two types of harms from radiation. What we call tissue harm or deterministic harm and stochastic harm. So deterministic means that if you get it, if you get exposed to that level of radiation, there's going to be an effect. Deterministically certain that you will get the effect. A stochastic one is that you might not get the effect. Nobody really knows. Is a risk that you might get it, you might not get it. Nobody really knows. A stochastic is a variable.
Right. So the difference between like getting a radiation burn on your skin versus cancer 30 years from now.
That's correct. So a deterministic effect would be if you go and do sunbathing for a week long in North Carolina beach, you're going to get a sunburn. It's very deterministic. It's not whether you will get a sunburn or not get a sunburn. You actually get the sunburn, period.
Yeah.
Right? That's deterministic. But would you develop cancer from that sunburn? You may not. Now, would the likelihood of cancer be higher if you spend more time in the sun? The answer is yes. That's the stochastic effect, right? So at low levels, radiation is believed to have a stochastic effects. At the higher doses, they tend to be more deterministic. And when it can become deterministic, and when we talk about deterministic, we are talking about the nuclear blast. We are talking about radiation therapy. We are talking about the higher levels of dose, even some fluoroscopic procedures, you can get to the deterministic zone. But for the vast majority of medical imaging, we never get to that zone, ever. We stay in the stochastic space. So how do we know that linear no threshold model is actually properly describes the likelihood of harm? First of all, the harm that we're talking about primarily, Chris, is in the context of cancer induction. The science tells us that if there is a certain amount of radiation that you're exposed to at a low level, there is certain likelihood that you would get cancer from that radiation exposure. We do know at higher radiation doses, I'm talking about the stochastic only now, at high radiation doses, there is evidence that the risk is definitely increasing, following the linear no threshold model. At lower doses, we don't really know. The data is stochastically, ironically, is stochastically very sparse. So we don't know for sure. You can extrapolate from that higher dose level, but at the lower dose levels, we really don't know for sure. Some statistical studies, epidemiological studies, demonstrate that linear threshold is still probably the most likely model that best describes the cancer induction. But the data is very uncertain. We don't know for sure that is the case.
I mean, correct me if I'm overstepping a bit, but it does feel a bit to me like in our modern world where I'm told that the shampoo I'm using might give me cancer, the microplastics in my water bottle, the, you know, hopping on an airplane and getting super low levels of radiation or sitting out in the sun. You know, I'm just curious how you determine that these sources of that this cancer growth originated with imaging and intentional radiation. I guess I see a little bit of a disconnect. Like, how do you tie the two together statistically?
I mean, that's the dilemma for us. If let's assume the cancer was induced by this radiation that you receive, that cancer doesn't have a different signature than any other cancer that you will get in your lifetime.
Correct.
On the average, Chris, 40% of us are going to get cancer. 40%. You know, that means 2 out of 5 people that you see today are going to get cancer in their lifetime, period, including myself. That's a very large percentage. So if now 0.01% added to that 40%, how can I deterministically say that that cancer was caused by this and not by the arsenic in your water or by stress that you expose yourself to? There is nothing specific about that. Now, is that risk real? I think from all the science that we know, it is real. There is a risk. But the magnitude of it is significantly small to the level that get almost masked by all sorts of other natural causes, right? Number one. And then there is no signature associated with that type of cancer compared to other types of cancers that are out there.
So how do you go about parsing that out?
So there have been studies, there have been some landmark studies. Some of them are pretty good studies in which, for example, they looked at the radiation workers in nuclear industry, for example. The amount of exposure they were received and the cancer that were inducing them. And statistically speaking, there is a slightly higher chance for those individuals who received higher dose to have gotten cancer. And that increased cancer is correlated, is lines up with that linear node threshold. So all things being equal, linear node threshold is still operational for us today. And I think we should take it seriously. I'm not saying that radiation doesn't have harm. Again, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the magnitude of that harm at the low level is significantly smaller to the level that its comparison to the benefit that you get from imaging is just a joke. Just period is a joke. I just give you an example. I just happened to, we were planning to do this podcast yesterday. We scheduled it today. The reason was that I had a tooth extracted and still there is some pain there. So it was a very painful process because as they were extracting the tooth broke in the middle of the procedure. So what they had to do, essentially, they had to break the whatever remains of the root, break it into pieces and extract it one piece at a time. And the visibility was very poor. The dentist could not quite see very well. It was pretty bad, actually, situation. So as a result, he took 4 x-rays in the process. And in fact, the 4th one, I asked him to do it, please, because I want to make sure no remnant of these pieces of bone that he was breaking is still there. Because if it would still there, it would get infected and there would be a huge mess down the stream. I want to make sure every piece of that bone is removed. The benefit was obvious. There is no question. I personally asked him, please get as many x-rays as you need. I am no concern whatsoever, right? Here's an example that you have a hypothetical risk, which is cannot directly apply to me. Remember when we also talk about a stochastic risk, we are talking about a population of patients. We're not talking about me. You're thinking about if there was a 1,000th of me or the population, there was a hypothetical aggregate individual that represent the aggregate population, that individual would receive potentially cancer, a multiverse enterprise in which there are 1,000 universes and one of those people in one of those 1,000 universes would get the cancer. So think about, when I say hypothetical, first of all, it's not about me. It's about this aggregate, a typical person that represents the entire population, which such a person doesn't exist. There is no such a thing as an average person. I have never met an average person. We are individuals that can be averaged, right? So first of all, this hypothetical person doesn't even exist, number one. Number two, you're assuming there are 1,000 or 10,000 universes in which this hypothetical patient lives in, and one of those individuals get cancer. So that is the level of extrapolation that we are making from ascribing that risk to my 4 dental x-rays.
Yeah.
While the benefit, but just like there is a no-brainer. I mean, do we need to measure the benefit that I received from the exposures yesterday? How do I measure it? I guess I should measure the likelihood of that one piece of bone remaining in my jaw and infecting my jaw and what kind of harm down the stream that infection would bring forth. I guess that's the only way to measure the risk of not doing the x-ray.
Right. Which that doesn't, I mean, like that doesn't even seem extremely measurable.
That is the reason we have had a hard time measuring it, because of that. Because it's so obvious. It's like, if you don't get the car, you're not going to get the job. How do you measure the benefit of that? Right? I mean, and that, how do you measure that benefit versus the other benefits, that other reasons that other people will buy cars, and aggregate them together? You see, the benefit itself is also highly individualized. And that's why the patient's voice and preference would also need to, you know, be present in that dialogue.
Right.
See, these are some of the challenges with the benefit, quantification of the benefit side of imaging. Even though it's a no-brainer, giving a number to it is difficult.
Right. Well, and, you know, you also said not to pivot too hard, but back to get nerdy, when you were talking about linear no threshold and you were talking about the studies and the data we have, you were talking about exposures to, I think, significantly higher levels of radiation than folks typically see, say, for instance, getting their jaw x-rayed. Do we have data sets that are more focused on those lower levels of radiation exposure? Or is the science kind of based around and built around the higher levels of exposure?
Yeah, the science is primarily based on higher level of radiation. That's when we can measure radiation better. That's when we can measure the harm better. And then remember, if we have that 40% likelihood of cancer that we have across the population, what you're looking for, a needle in a haystack, is a very subtle effect that you're trying to discern. To the tune that discerning it is hard, it's hard to measure it. And as a result, you only can more reliably measure it where the radiation dose is higher than the levels that we use. So the unit of radiation exposure, whole body radiation exposure that we often refer to is sievert. Usually, and sievert is a large number, you know, at sievert levels of, you know, 30 to 50 to 100, there are deterministic effects, and you know, there are effects of, you know, Chernobyl type situation. In the medical space, we measure stuff in millisieverts. That means 1,000th of a sievert. So most of the X-ray exposure that we see are hovering around, I would say, below 5 to 10 millisievert. Millisievert, right? And that's some of the higher exposure procedures are like 5 or 10 millisieverts. Sometimes you can go to 30 or 40 millisievert, but usually they're hovering in a single digit and below single digit, okay? And those are generally the same zone of the same overall magnitude of the also background radiation that we all get exposed to. So we do know a statistically significant measurements have been made at 100 to 150 millisieverts and up. That means at least an order of magnitude higher values. Then you can see that linear threshold actually is sort of manifesting itself. When it comes to the lower doses, you really don't see it very confidently. No, I'm not saying because we don't see it, it doesn't exist. I'm just saying when we talk about it, that level of confidence that we don't have needs to be projected. So one of the problems with scientists is that, myself included, sometimes we project so much certainty that is not congruent with how much we know. So we don't know. So we need to be humble in a way we express the risk even at those dose levels. So that's why I say uncertainty is present, ambiguity is present. We only can talk about aggregate results across average populations, while the benefit are orders of magnitude higher for the real patient and actually happens at the level of the individual patient that we are caring for, not just some sort of hypothetical entity out there that doesn't even exist. There is no such a thing. Again, I'm repeating myself. There is no such a thing as an average patient.
Right. You're talking about all of these different doses, right? In measured in millisieverts and sieverts. But a lot of what I hear being talked about too is, I hear a lot of talk about radiation thresholds, and I hear a lot about like guidance. And so I mean, personally, I'm a little confused between like the difference between a radiation threshold, so like a dose beneath which no harm is expected, and the idea of clinical guidance, which, you know, helps providers decide when to image. How do you kind of distinguish between the two concepts, and why is it important that we don't, you know, conflate them?
Yeah. So first of all, if we breathe linear no threshold model that we just talked about so much, there is no dose below which there is no risk. In fact, linear no threshold tells me that there is no threshold. Like, right. It's not more obvious than that. So any radiation, if you believe no linear threshold, there is any radiation is harmful, right? So number one, any threshold is hypothetical. Right. That's number one. Second thing is that when you apply a threshold, what you're saying is that you're saying you create a sense of safety or security. You're adding a bureaucracy to the process that is not safe at all.
Right.
If you really believe radiation is harming you, there is no threshold should be applied. So you're feeling like I'm safe when I'm below threshold. No, that threshold is a hypothetical man-made construct, has nothing to do with this risk, number one. Number two. Number three, where does that number, the threshold, come from? You're saying, oh, it's based on what other practitioners they're using. You could say that. It's like, let's draw a number and say, this is most people don't go above this dose, stay below that dose. But below that dose across practitioners and across populations. So here is the dilemma. Again, I'm repeating myself for the third time. There is no average patient. Each patient is a different story, whose voice needs to be incorporated in the care of that individual, by the way, right? So you cannot apply an aggregate number from a population that doesn't represent me to tell me what is right for me. You can't. In fact, any idea of threshold essentially reduces the individual patient to a populational representation. There was an article in New Yorker this month about this idea of how aggregate medicine undermine personalized care, not in radiation dose, across the entire practice of medicine, right? So that means that we need to go out there and do whatever? No, I'm just saying provide some threshold-ish concept, but don't call the threshold, call the guidance. That means also you allow the flexibility for the practitioner to practice their art and allow the patient to incorporate their voice in the process. You are still within the guidance zone. You can still follow some sort of a aid in the process. And also, don't approach either the patient or the practitioner paternalistically. If you give me a threshold, that means I need to be watched. I'm not trusted, right? So I think the concept of guidance is a better concept than concept of threshold, especially when it comes to dose. Because again, you are holding up a hypothetical construct to presumably make the medicine safe, and you might even potentially make the medicine unsafe because the undue application of a threshold from a population that does not quite represent the reality of the patient or the expertise of the practitioner would cause the practitioner potentially not to do the right thing for the patient, for what the patient needs. So the personalized care of the individual can be compromised because you tried to make the procedure safe. Am I making sense?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it gets me, it flips the conversation for me, right? Like, rather than the risks of exposing yourself to radiation and getting imaged, it's more like, what are the potential risks of not getting imaged or doing suboptimal imaging?
Yeah. In fact, there was a paper that we just published, I think a month or two ago in Medicine Communication, Chris, maybe if we can include that as a part of the podcast would be good, in which we created an aggregate population of about 1 million patients who get CT scans for their liver cancer care. And we assume what would happen if they don't get their CT scan because they're afraid of radiation or get suboptimal CT scans as a part of their care. Hypothesize, if that would happen, what would happen? And then we didn't say that those people would get cancer or the cancer gets aggregated or get sort of advanced and the people die. No, we just said, whatever, if they have cancer, we assume certain prevalence of cancer in that population. Not all 1 million have cancer, by the way. We assume that certain of them have cancer and the diagnosis of cancer gets delayed by a couple of years. What would be the consequence of that in terms of mortality across that population? It turned out that the risk associated with suboptimal CT imaging or not doing the CT imaging is 5 times higher than any potential risk of the radiation. So this is a very hypothetical construct, right? But if you're only looking at the liver cancer only, we actually plan to expand now that project further. But that tells you, when I'm saying that when you compare the benefit versus the risk, it's just almost a joke to say, okay, does benefit outweigh the risk? Yeah, of course it does. There's no question. The orders of magnitude different between the two. Of course. Would that mean that we need to ignore the risk? No. We are healthcare providers. Whatever you do, you need to minimize the risk. But when you think about it, everything in life that we do involves risk. Is there any risk-free enterprise? Right? I mean, I just came from a ski vacation and, you know, my daughter got not 20 stitches. Shouldn't we have not gone to that ski vacation? No, right? So essentially that life becomes how we manage risk. And I think you said that beautifully. The risk of not doing the imaging or risk of doing suboptimal imaging is significantly larger than the hypothetical risk that we have from the radiation that is involved.
Yeah, and I mean, and I hope the listeners don't take this like as a joke, or I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way, but if something's wrong with me, I would like to figure it out so I can live to an age where if I do get cancer from the radiation, I made it there.
That's a good idea. Yes, absolutely. And remember,
not to sound cavalier, but just like, if there's something wrong inside of me that I need taken care of in order to live to an age where I can get cancer from my radiation exposure, I will take that path.
Right. I totally get it. And again, remember, it's not that you're not going to get cancer. 40% chance you're going to get cancer, period. Whether you do this imaging or not.
Yeah.
That's assumed. So I feel like this whole dialogue of benefit versus risk, again, I'm going back to some of my earlier comments, it sort of undermines, so it misrepresents the reality of the scenario before us.
Yeah. And so, I mean, how do you go about communicating this extreme nuance to patients?
Yeah, I mean, I think patients, practitioners, I think they need to understand that radiation medicine, radiation imaging is a gift. Number one, is a gift that people did not have 100 years ago. They used to do what's so-called exploratory surgery. That means they open you up to just figure out what's going on, right? What is the risk associated with that? Let's talk about that, right? We don't need to do that anymore. Radiation medicine, medical imaging has transformed medicine as we practice today. I'm not sure how you can operate a medical establishment without the radiology practice. It's impossible. It's an integral part of the healthcare. Unless you want to close our healthcare facility and say we would not provide health services, you cannot deal with the maladies of patients without imaging them. So the benefit significantly outweighs the risk. That needs to be central to any dialogue with the patients. Patient needs to understand this. This idea of fear-mongering, that's saying, oh, this, you might get cancer or your child might get cancer. Well, your child might have a brain bleed and would die tomorrow. Would you care about that more? Or would you care about potential of a hypothetical child that is not even your child? 20 years down the road, or 30 years down the road, might get a cancer, which he or she would get cancer anyway. Which one would you choose, right? So I think that risk needs to be put in perspective. The other thing, the risk needs to be put in the right perspective. And then we need to not lord that information over our patients. We need to dignify them with their preference to be incorporated in whatever shared decision-making needs to be made for them, right? Again, ultimately, it's not our decision. It's our decision with the patient together. by arming the practitioner decision. The other thing I want to point out is that the risk is a very tricky concept. If I say the risk of you drinking this drink is you develop this situation 0.1% or 1% or 10%, would you really think that there is a factor of 100 difference between those three numbers that I gave you? It's not for me that way. I don't think about it that way. When you say there is a risk of something, I stopped listening to you. The numbers don't matter very much, right? In other words, I think at least I don't have a very good sense of a statistical sense of the world. To me, all risks are equitable.
I hate flying, for instance, and I know statistically, like I have a firm understanding that statistically I am safer flying than I am driving my car every day.
Yes.
And yet, something I was talking about in therapy the other day with my therapist is like, no matter how many times I'm sitting on an airplane rattling off the statistics in my head, that does nothing for me. It does not make me more comfortable in that airplane. It does not make me less comfortable in a car.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. That is true. That's why when you tell me there is a 10% chance or 1% chance that I get cancer, my subconscious tells me, oh, I would get a small cancer, only like a 1% tiny cancer. I still get cancer, but it's like a tiny one. But that's not true, right? That means if there are 100 of us, one of us would get cancer, the 99 go home free. They would not get any cancer. Those 99 ones are just fine. It's like a lottery ticket. That's what it is, right? The reason that actually gambling industry is so successful is because people don't understand the concept of a statistical variability of that space either. They're actually marketing that, having a business out of that. So that's why I think the communication related to radiation risk or any concept of risk is challenging, because the benefit often is not likelihood based. When you think about it, if I bump my head against the wall and there is a certain likelihood of bleeding, that bleeding can kill me, period. The benefit is almost immediate.
Yeah.
Right? But the risk is like you might get a lottery ticket type of thing. That you might get a lottery ticket that you get a cancer out of this, and a very low likelihood. Would you like to have a lottery ticket? Or would you like to know whether you have bleeding your brain? See, you cannot compare them as easily with one another.
No. Well, honestly, I feel like this might be a perfect little cliffhanger. Surprise for our listeners, we're going to actually do two parts with Dr. Sommet today. Part two coming out in a couple of weeks, where we're going to dive into more about how in the hell we are supposed to measure this life-saving impact of imaging. Dr. Sommet, thank you so much for joining me today, and I'll talk to you again in just 2 minutes for us and 2 weeks for our listeners.
Great to be with you, Chris.
Frame by Frame Rethink Imaging is brought to you by Imalogix. Here, you'll find engaging interviews with thought leaders, experts, and patients, sharing stories that showcase the transformative power of medical imaging. To discover how Imalogix is rethinking imaging in healthcare, visit imalogix.com. Be sure to subscribe to Frame by Frame Rethink Imaging on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And from all of us here at Imalogix, thanks for tuning in.